This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Wrestling Network. Welcome back to episode number 4 of Wrestling's Chicken Salad, where we attempt to make any bad wrestling look or sound good. My name is Ben Locke, and I am joined as always by my two excellent co-hosts. First of all, a man who is the king of the shit take, but is also now close friends with both Vince Russo and Goldilocks from TNA. It is Mr. Sean Kidd. Sean, how are you tonight, my friend?
Good evening, Ben. I don't know. That might be a shit take on the Russo and the Goldilocks too. But good evening, guys. It's great to be here. It's amazing that we're on episode 4 of looking at really shitty pay-per-views and we're still here. So I don't know. This one tonight might break us. So we'll see. I already know based on the pre-conversation that Logan and I have very different views on several of these matches. So it should be a fun show.
Yeah. No, nobody's quit just yet, but this could break us.
It could, definitely.
And my other co-host, of course, you can hear him on Highway to the Impact Zone. He's your friend. He's my friend. He's a bus driver's friend. He is the Mississippi Mud Pie, Mr. Logan Crosland. How are you, Logan?
I'm doing fantastic. I've always wanted to be a bus driver's friend, so I've reached the peak that I can get to.
Well, that's it. You've got no further peak to get to. That's it. You've hit it.
The bus driver definitely surpasses Russo and Goldilocks. So Logan, you win.
Hank, all the way.
Yes. Okay, so first of all, I want to say thank you for all the positive feedback that we got for the last episode. I don't know how you guys felt. I was getting quite a big head there for a while. We were getting quite good feedback from a fair few folk.
Yeah, the last episode got a lot of good feedback. And, you know, I think the reality of the situation is that it wasn't a bad pay-per-view. So I think it's an easy one to go back and watch and listen to. And obviously Joe Fowler and the Lex Express and Lex's bus driver were great special guest stars on the last episode. And that helped enhance the listen as well. So, yeah, a lot of good feedback. It was good to hear.
Yes, Logan, it wasn't a bad show.
Sorry. I did my research and I tried. So, I mean, I put it up to the people. So blame the people if you're going
to
blame anybody.
You caved to the public pressure, Logan.
I'm just a shithead. I can't take it. I chicken shit. I'm not chicken salad.
That's right.
As you may have gathered, we like a rotating, what's the word I'm looking for? A spin on the shows. So, we'll pick up the show, sorry. So Logan went last time with SummerSlam 93. Tonight, it was Sean's choice. Sean, remind the good ladies and gentlemen at home what we are listening to tonight, or what we are reviewing, tonight.
So what we're reviewing, listening to, whatever you'd like to call it, is Fall Brawl 99.
So an interesting show, interesting in quote-unquote here. Why did you pick this show?
I think it's finally remembered for being one of the worst pay-per-views of all time from WCW. It's also right in that era of where I think you're going to talk about a little bit of where we are about to have Russo come into the picture. And honestly, it's one that I hadn't watched since the initial viewing. So I wanted to go back and watch it with a clear head and a clear spin. And knowing that it's already perceived as a bad pay-per-view, I wanted to go into it and see if it's really as bad. And I thought it made a good candidate for the show.
Okay, Logan, what are you familiar with this time period of WCW at all?
No, I pretty much haven't seen anything from 99 WCW or 2000. So we had like the group watch chat that we had for a couple years there. So we watched like the last like 10 or so episodes of WCW one time. So I kind of know 2001 pretty good, but this is a blind spot for me.
And you're probably wishing it still was.
Yeah, it makes me not kind of want to catch up with the rest of it. So,
so it is time for Sean's favorite part of the show, our live memories of this particular episode. So, Logan, I know you just said you're not familiar with 99 WCW, but would you just like to remind Sean how old you were at this point?
I had just turned 6, so.
Six.
One of these days we'll get to a show where he's like 20 and I'll feel a lot better.
Yeah, one of these days we will break into the like 2000s, but we're not going to do that tonight. So
No, we're not.
I've seen Royal Rumble 2013 is going to be a nice show eventually.
I've seen this show precisely 3 times. So once a couple of years ago when I got the network, and then twice just doing some research for this particular pod. Sean, what about you? Your live memories of this show?
So interestingly enough, we've done 3 of these pods, and all 3 of the shows we watched so far, I believe I was drunk. However, this one I was not. I was actually 26. And at this time with WCW, I was starting to fall out of favor with them a little bit, and I was tuning in more to WWF or WWE or whatever it was in 99. Probably it was still WWF, that's right. But anyway, I had really fallen out of favor after Super Brawl of this year. I really started to fade back on my watching a little bit, but then I would still get the pay-per-views, but the amount of attention I would pay to Nitro or the feuds or the storylines really, really waned because they were really off the wall or ludicrous and the talent didn't interest me or how they were booked. So, yeah, so I don't have a lot of fond memories of this show or the live watch. I know I watched it. I know I walked away not feeling great about the product, and that's why I wanted to pick this show again tonight, mainly for me to go back and watch it with a clearer set of eyes. So, yeah, so I'm sorry. No fun story there. I wasn't drunk this time, so I broke my I broke my streak on this one.
You fixed your problem.
I fixed my problem by 99, yeah.
99, the good stuff was over. Yeah. So, like Sean said about a couple of minutes ago, this is quite an interesting pay-per-view for what was going on behind the scenes. So this is the last pay-per-view where our friend and yours, Mr. Eric 83 Weeks Bischoff, solely in charge of the company. So how long did he last for? I want to say 6 years. That sound right?
Let's see, when did he come in?
90? Yeah, 93 was about when he came in. Or when he started being like EVP, I think.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you think of the guy, six and a half years, that's a good run.
Yeah, it's he had a good run. Absolutely.
And a couple of weeks before this show was the infamous town meeting, which I don't know if you two know about, but that was a show. I know it was definitely the meeting where Bischoff basically said, if anybody wants to leave, there's the door, and Raven went out of the door. That I know is truth. Is it the meeting where Bischoff said only these people ever drew any money and Ric Flair was sat right next to him? I might be getting the meetings confused with him now.
It's really hard. I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint when all these meetings happened. It's just everything fell apart. And you heard stories and all the dirt sheets and everything on the internet. A lot of those kind of meetings were happening during this time frame. So it's really hard to pinpoint if this is the show.
Yeah. I know it's definitely the show where Raven walked out because he made his debut the month after on ECW.
Correct.
Or re-debut, I should say.
Yeah.
And obviously, in the WWF, we were in peak Russo-ness. 99 is sort of the peak of his reign of terror. Try watch them shows today, by the way. I'm doing the 99 Chrono Watch at the moment. They are interesting shows to watch. Let's just put it that way.
Well, we're a month hot after that SummerSlam match with The Rock and Mr. Ass main event. So obviously Russo's doing well for himself, but WCW wanted to sign him right away for that match.
Oh man. You know, people say the Attitude Era was good. Go watch some of that 99 stuff. We'll be getting to it at some point.
Yeah, I think even in WWF 99, I think those of people with, or most of us with fond memories of 99 WWF, go back and watch it again and see what your thoughts are. I think it'll be interesting, actually.
Yeah, I've kind of always wanted to do like a pod series on 99 just because I think it's such a hot time, and it's such a trash year deep down.
I mean, it's not 99 is definitely a pivotal moment in wrestling history. It's kind of like Ruthlessly Aggressive, where you don't hear a lot about it, but 99 is right up there with that, because it's kind of like the downfall of where everything starts to turn a little bit.
And then, because it doesn't really pick up till like November.
And 2000 is so good. WWE, so.
Yeah, it runs, 99 it runs is up. Definitely an interesting year for sure.
It runs all the way through to Sean's favorite pay per view of all time, of course, WrestleMania 17.
That's another story for another pod, and I'm sure it will never be on this show. But
that is, I was thinking about this the other day. When we get to like WrestleMania season, I might just pick WrestleMania 17 if it's my go, just so I can hear what Sean has to say about it.
I would look forward to it, but we gotta appeal to the masses, and Sean hating on one show versus everybody else doesn't appeal to the pod probably. But I'll do it.
It'll be 3 or 17 for sure.
It'll be either 3 or 17 if we do that pick, just for the record.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah. Right. I think we've done enough chatting about other shows. Shall we get ourselves ready, gentlemen? Let's Absolutely. Strap ourselves in. We are going to Winston-Salem in North Kakalaki. For Full Brawl 99. See, I can do the Americanisms. Big Kakalaki. Yeah, I know that one.
I'm impressed. I couldn't say that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We open the show with a hype video about who we can trust in the main event. And trust is the overriding theme of the show. Sean, who could you trust?
In 99, beer, alcohol, but no, seriously, in this opening video, I actually like this opening video, because here's the thing, it's a simple, basic premise. You got Luger, Hogan, Sting. Sting and Hogan have that history, so Luger placing doubt in their heads makes a lot of sense. So I think from a premise of a storyline standpoint of Hogan, Sting, and Luger putting that doubt in, and Luger, Sting's best friend, I think it makes a ton of sense, and I actually didn't mind them doing this kind of opening on that premise. I thought it was okay.
It was a good, like you say, it was a good base video. What do you think of it, Logan, as somebody who wasn't familiar with this?
I mean, at this point, I don't think you can really trust anybody. I mean, I don't know much about Sting being a heel or even ever turning heel or anything like that, but I think Sting's about the only person you could probably trust in that group.
Well, and if history shows, Sting's opinions and trust of people always punches them in the face, especially when it came to Ric Flair, right? I mean, how many times did Ric Flair turn on Sting? So, and then, we're not even 2 years into the point of where Sting and Hogan were battling after Sting coming back after a year and a half layoff. So it's interesting that we're in this spot and almost 2 years to the day of Hogan and Sting and that big feud going on. So I wouldn't trust Hogan if I were Sting, but Sting's an idiot. Trust everybody at some point. So
very true.
Sting does have trust issues, bless him.
Over trust issues.
So we enter the arena where, for the final time on pay-per-view, we are welcomed by our commentary team, who are Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay. After this show, it goes down to a two-man booth, and I think Bobby's out the door by January, I want to say. That sounds about right.
That sounds right to me.
So they introduce us to the show, hype the main event, and throw us to a video for our opening match, which is Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse, otherwise known as Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope, versus Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, and Billy Kidman. Sean, have we had a bigger sort of diversity of talent in a match before this, do you think?
This is a very interesting match. I mean, for one, I won't get into the match yet as we get into it, but has any non-wrestling group, outside of wrestling, has anyone else had bigger success than Insane Clown Posse in milking the whole Monday Night War era? They were in ECW, they were in WWF, they were here in WCW. They milked it and they made something out of it. So I can't say this excites me, this premise, the six-man. I was a fan of Vampiro. Because I thought there was something to them that they hadn't tapped into yet. And then obviously Eddie, Mysterio, and Kidman, they were all solid hands. Eddie was fantastic. But this time frame in this, Mysterio was looking like Hispanic Nick Carter with the blonde hair, and Kidman was doing the whole wife beater thing. And so great wrestlers, great talent in this match. Just the time frame is so weird for all these guys. So that's what I'll say about that.
Logan, over the years, have you become familiar with the Insane Clown Posse's wrestling ability?
Yeah, I've seen him in both promotions before. I mean, I've obviously never seen him in this era of WCW, but yeah, I've seen him and know enough about him to kind of know where this match was headed. But Tony faces us with the question before the match of, are Insane Clown Posse rappers or wrestlers? And I've got a better question. What are we doing?
that is the greatest question of them all, Logan. You know, the other thing I like before we start this match is, like, I had no idea Vampiro and Eddie had a history in Mexico, but I didn't know it was, you know, I didn't know it was over the fact that Vampiro was a musician. So I had no idea the history. I think it's cool to add that history in there, but that was so new to me. Like, I had no idea Vampiro and Eddie Guerrero had previous history in Mexico, so I thought that was cool if they could play on it, you know. I thought that was neat, but
The thing I didn't get about the match is, so Tony reminds us that it's a return match from Road Wild. That's fair enough. But why did he not make this match like a Falls Count Anywhere match? Let's go a bit crazy.
Yeah, it would have made sense. Know,
it's a return match, but it's going to be exactly the same as the other match. Brilliant.
Well, because people were dying to see this six-man again after Road Wild.
Because everybody wants to see Violent J get into a collar and elbow tie-up. I mean, it's what dreams are made of.
I don't know if you noticed the two women at ringside during the Mysterio Kim entrance. They were very happy to see them two boys.
The crowd in general was really hot for this match, which was shocking. Like, out of all the matches we watched tonight, I think the crowd reaction to this one was pretty insane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they definitely blew their wad early.
Yeah, they sure did.
I did like the fact that Ray and Kidman decided to wear matching wife beater outfits. That was a nice touch, I thought.
Yeah, this Rey Mysterio era is so sad. This is bullshit. It's just sad. Pure sad.
It's jarring to see him without a mask.
It is. I mean, he looks 12 years old. The blonde hair is jarring. I mean, it's just, it's so bad, and was just a bad idea. Goddamn Kevin Nash taking his mask from him. Stupid.
You've got to say, though, fair play to WWE. Obviously, they don't release many DVDs nowadays, but they never, ever showed any matches, did they, past February 99. That was it.
No, because they knew the gimmick and the marketing for themselves was with the mask, which WCW, of course, didn't understand the whole marketing thing to begin with. So
during the match, Mike reminds us, Logan, you'll be pleased to hear, that ICP used their money they made from music to buy a wrestling ring. So that's how we ended up with the Insane Clown Posse as wrestlers. Thanks a lot, guys. Logan, I mean, they're really bad, aren't they? Even for two guys that have quote-unquote trained, they are so bad. Or is it just a case of the other three are that good that they make them look bad?
I mean, I think they're really bad, and it was really a joy to watch them get their ass kicked for some of this match. But, yeah, I think the other three guys are just really talented. But, yeah, I mean, at the same time, they didn't bring their end either. So, But Bobby at one point says Violent J is proof that Brian Knobs had children. and I wondered if Knobs had birthed him from the Knobs hole. So, that's a question that needs answering.
There's a Knobs photo that we need. Obviously, halfway through this match, all three men have to play face and peril, and the reason is Ray gets quite a nasty injury. At which point did he get the injury, Sean? Was it when he got? I got when he got whipped into the barricade. But I had
the barricade too. I wasn't 100% sure. And honestly, when I watched this, I don't remember on the first watch of this many years ago when I first saw it. I don't remember Ray getting injured here. I mean, Ray got injured so many times because of his knee, so it was hard to keep track. But yeah, I think it was that spot. But I'm not 100% sure when he got injured.
Yeah, because they tried, didn't they, to carry the match on with Ray. They were, you know, using chin locks and as many rest holds as they could. But obviously, Ray at some stage must have gone, it's not happening.
And well, then unfortunately, Mysterio getting injured, you really don't have a heel team that could carry the faces. The faces are probably on a 2-3, you know, handicap trying to carry this match at this point because the other three aren't going to give him anything.
Yeah. Go on, Luke. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think when he like leaps into the guardrail when he gets thrown, I think he kind of planted weird and it just something went wrong, and I think that's when it happened. I think he was like about to leap into the guardrail, and I think his knee just kind of shifted the wrong way or something.
I think regular listeners, I say that like we've got, you know, we've been on earlier shows, we've done four. Regular listeners will know that
the millions of people that listen to us.
I'm not exactly a play-by-play guy, and I don't usually mention moves specifically, but I've got to mention one of the worst wrestling moves I think I've ever seen, which was the combination move that Vampiro and Shaggy tried to do on Eddie, where Vampiro's got him up in the powerbomb right at the end of the match. I don't know if you guys picked up on that.
I picked up on many, many bad spots in this match.
So he's got him up in like a reverse powerbomb. So if you imagine his body's going backwards, and Shaggy tries to do a neck breaker, and it's just awful. It was actually business exposing. That's how bad it was. Like Eddie's doing all the work.
Yep, I have that, actually have that in my notes. I was going through my notes, and I actually do see that. You know, there's there's a lot of stuff in this. I mean, there's botches, but there are times where, you know, Insane Cloud Pass, he does get a couple of good moves in. You know, there's some good work by the faces. For me, the biggest botch of the whole match is the end. Like, I have no idea what was going on with that end, where we're waiting to push someone off the top rope, you're waiting to do your spot, and the end just seems so totally botched. it was just confusing and a hot mess. I had no idea what was going on with that end at the end of the match.
Logan,
yeah, that gut wrench that Vampiro hits is pretty awesome. But and then, you know, seeing the Shooting Star Press is always a good time.
Oh, and he's nailed him with the knee though, like the knees.
I was gonna say he botched and kneed him like directly in the face. So Vampiro might have had some facial damage there.
Yeah, Vampiro ate some shit on that. And you know what? That's what usually is fun. As long as people don't get hurt, is when Kidman really screws it up and it looks even more brutal than the actual real one.
I was saying during this match, they really start harping on Tony for some reason, and Bobby asked if Tony ever thought about having his hair like Vampiro.
And Tony said
he did for a little bit, and Tanay gets kind of pissed when he doesn't really explain or elaborate. And then Bobby asks if photos during that time had numbers at the bottom, so implying that I guess he gets with the haircut.
I like the bit where he said, "Yeah, I had the dreads, but I didn't have the sides cut in." Like the dreads was the normal bit of the conversation. Yeah.
Hey, the one thing I did like about the end of the match though is that I liked Eddie holding Vampiro's legs down so that so that was a nice little touch of sanity based on what we have seen in this match, so that made a lot of sense. But it was just, you know, for me the whole match, you're sloppy and timing issues all around. You know, obviously Ray got hurt, and the great line at the end with Ray being hurt was Bobby saying he was too lazy to walk to the back, which I thought was hilarious. it was just like, what a dick thing to say, knowing the poor guy's hurt. So, but you know what? I would be all in. Like, for me, I would probably be all in on a real feud between Vampiro and Eddie Guerrero. If they took their history of Mexico and formed that story between the two of them, I would, at 99, at that time, I would have been really piqued by that.
I mean, I actually think this match would have been really good with a proper tag team in with Vampiro. You know, obviously if Raven had stuck around, you know, Vampiro, Raven, and somebody else.
Yep. But in the end, I ended up giving it 2 stars. That's what I gave it. It was 2.
I went 2.5. You went 2 as well.
Yeah, I went 2 as well. Yeah.
2.5. I get the feeling that's going to be my high score for the night. Just to warn everybody.
Wait, not mine.
Pathetic. All right.
We had
Logan's already okay. starting.
Good lad, Logan. I've got your back, buddy. I've got your back.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we headed into the back to the AOL chat room. Do you remember AOL chat room, Sean?
I do. I used to be in the AOL chat rooms all the time.
Oh, I have a question real quick. I have a question real quick.
Go on, go for it.
They plug the hotline before the first match, and they always say that you need your parents' permission. I always wanted to know, how do they know that you have your parents' permission? Does your parent have to call first, and then you can listen to whatever that says?
Or no,
are they just to assume that you have your parents' permission?
That was their token statement that when their kid rang up a $1,000 phone bill that, hey, we warned them, and they didn't do it. It's not our fault. That was their legal out, I think.
I always like when me and Jeannie say, kids get permission, but make sure you call the hotline. It's like, yeah, you've done the legal bit. You've done the legal bit, Gene, but I still want the money.
You know, and it's saying that now, how insane is it that they would charge people $99 a minute for what we get for free on the internet now? Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Think about that.
21 years ago, my friend.
Yeah, me and Gene made a great career out of that.
Insane.
He bloody did. I mean, he was getting quite a bit scratched, wasn't he, off the hotline?
Oh yeah, I think a lot of his contract was based on the hotline. So yeah, he definitely had a nice little second wave of a career with that shit show. Yeah.
But he was not. I didn't catch the guy's name, but he was. I mean, Jim was not on the hotline for.
No,
an
I
interview.
Think his name was Chad Diamani. Was his name?
Thank you, Sean. Thank you. It was an interview. Right. It was the interview with the Revolution and Perry Saturn guaranteeing a clean sweep for the Revolution tonight.
Nothing says internet enthusiast at WCW.com like Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko and Perry discussing downloading the Nitro Girls. So it's when I think internet, I think Dean Malenko. So let's just leave it at that.
Malenko looked thoroughly interested in it all, didn't he? He was like, yeah, okay.
he was definitely over it at this point.
Yeah, this was pretty bad. It was a pretty bad little thing here.
Okay, so then we go to the ring for our first title match of the night. It is the Cruiserweight title match between Kaz Hayashi and Lenny. Not Lenny Lane anymore, just Lenny, because he is one half with Lodi of the West Hollywood Blondes. This was pretty risque stuff for WCW, wasn't it, Sean?
It was, and, you know, it was their answer. I mean, at the end of the day, what he ended up being, Lenny and Lodi, you know, it ended up being Lenny was Jericho. You know, I could say great value Jericho, but that's pretty obvious. And then what they try to do is they throw a little bit of the Gold Dust gimmick in with him, and yeah, it was just bad, and it was very risque for sure.
Yeah, standards and practices could not arrive soon enough.
Well, just to save us from having to watch this idiot for sure.
I'm gonna ask this question to Logan, but I'm gonna throw it open to both of you. So Lodi had a sign saying nothing good ever came out of North Carolina. I want to be positive on this podcast. Name some good things from North Carolina, please.
Ric Flair.
Michael Jordan.
There you go. There you go. There you go. So, Lodi, you are wrong, my friend. I know you're listening. You are so wrong. I'll be honest, chaps. I don't have many notes for this match. It genuinely might be one of the dullest matches I've ever watched. It took me 3 goes to watch it properly and make notes. I know one of us is particularly high on it, so I'm going to pass you over to that person. Sean, why is this match so good?
Okay, when you say particularly high, that's kind of stretching the truth a little bit, okay? So
you went 2.5
no,
on it.
Okay, you don't even – okay, hey, Logan, shush. Yeah. It's not your turn yet. Hold on. Hold on 1 minute. Okay? Hold on there. I got to put you a timeout there, child. Hold on.
Get those handbags out, boys.
Okay, just hear me out. Here's what always happens with me on these shows, because I give a take, then someone runs back to others and says – he said this is better than this, and this is the best match ever. So let's really be clear on this match, okay? Lenny is awful. He is so bad. Him as cruiserweight champion is a tragedy. I mean, my God, this guy won his title from Rey Mysterio Jr. Lenny has a cruiserweight title win over Rey Mysterio Jr. Let that soak in your head. It's crazy. In saying that, I thought Kaz in this match looked really, really good. And I feel like, honestly, both these guys are the perennial jobbers of this division. And it was nice to see Kaz get a little bit of shine. I mean, he carried this whole match. Lenny did nothing this whole entire match. Like, there might have been a few spots here and there, but Kaz was just selling like crazy for him, was doing great offense. And, you know, where really, I mean, there was a, you know, and, you know, there was this one spot where there was a, that I thought was really cool, and it was towards the end. Kaz did a slingshot bulldog from the apron, which you don't ever see. I thought he did a vicious Liger bomb. I thought there was a vicious Liger bomb, that by Kaz, that was amazing. And then there was also a great, really top rope Piranha. So there was good stuff in this match. I think the hatred for Lenny really takes you out of this match. And, you know, when you look at these two, you're thinking this is a Saturday night show on a pay-per-view. I didn't think the match was that bad. I thought Kaz did a really good job. I think with a better opponent or someone in that position, you guys would have thought differently about it. That's why I gave it 2.5 stars. So overall, Lenny's not good. Kaz made the match. You know, Lenny still looks like he belongs in a power plant. The Gold Dust Lenny combo gimmick is terrible. But it's because of Kaz, he did really good. And it's a tragedy how he got treated in this WCW run. I mean, he had the ability to be a really awesome Japanese cruiserweight, I thought. And without this match, it would have been, without him in this match, it would have been a complete and utter dud. So I like how Kaz is treated in WCW to how the Japanese contingent and the current watch we have on the Impact Pod is treated. They're just there to do the job, and it was nice here to see him. Even though he did the job, he made the match. Okay, that's my long diatribe of shit take. We're at 2.5 stars. Logan, go ahead.
I mean, yep. I just have to say that the early offense is focused on Lenny's ass. So, I mean, that's just not even a good start to begin with. I don't blame the crowd for not being up for this one, but, like, this is the beginning of the crowd just, like, being super apathetic to this show. Like, they were so hot for the opener, and they just could not give a shit about this one.
And I don't blame them. They should, I do not blame them for that.
Yeah, which, you know, having a homosexual gimmick in North Carolina is probably not the best idea. So they should be happy they didn't get a ton of heat for that one. So, but, I mean, outside of a couple of outside dives and that nasty Liger bomb that you were talking about, this match is way too long, and it sucks. It's awful. I hate it. I hate Lenny. I hate Lodi.
I hate this match because it's Lenny and Lodi, not because of the actual match.
No, I just hate it. It was awful.
All right.
It was crazy seeing him use the skull crushing finale to win, because Miz is pretty much the only person I've ever seen do that move. So that was crazy. But I went 0.5 star.
I didn't go that low. I went 1 star. I went 1 star. Yeah, the skull crushing finale was a bit crazy to see that at this stage. I will agree, the Liger bomb was fantastic, and a couple of those dives really good.
Yes.
Sean, do you think, obviously, in 2000, I'm not sure if it does get a few good champions coming up. Is this like the nadir for the cruiserweight title in WCW? Because obviously, I know Disco and Jackie had a bit of a feud, so that might take it. But
yeah, the cruiserweight. Yeah, I mean, the cruiserweight title at this point is done. It's over. What made it great in, you know, 96, 97, 98, those days are over. This is just a joke of a title at this point, and it doesn't get any better.
Yeah. So like I say, I don't think this is actively bad. I just think it's actively dull. That's why I didn't really want to talk about it that much, because it was
this shit take of 2.5 for me might overtake my Michael's comma comment. So I'm gonna own it, and I'm gonna stand by it.
Okay. I mean, I'll agree that Kaz brought it, but Lenny did not bring it, and it was terrible. So I'll shut up there.
Well, I'm more inclined with you, Logan. So, you know, it's a two versus one here. You're okay.
Guys, I can't blame you. It's just my take. I don't blame you for hating the match whatsoever. Totally makes sense. So
after this match is over, we, for some reason, have an in-ring interview, because that's what you do on a pay-per-view. You bring the challenger out for the world title, third from the top in the first hour of the pay-per-view, to do an interview that you could do in the back. That's what happens.
Are we watching Nitro?
It's funny you said that. I have felt like a little Nitro-ish. So you're spot on, Logan.
I've got that too. And like, was anything actually said in the interview that we didn't know already, or if you didn't even know from the hype video, even if you haven't seen this show before?
I think the only thing he really said... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Logan. You go first.
Yeah, that's fine. I thought it was pretty pointless. Basically, all Sting says is if Luger gets involved in the main event, that their friendship is... Or in a negative way to Sting, that their friendship is over. So, I mean, that's pretty much all he says. So, but, like, this character... This Sting character, like the Crow, he should have never spoken. He should just be silent. He should just be a badass and kick everybody's ass. The moment he started speaking, it killed it to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I was like, you know, he mentioned the whole "I'm back in black" thing like that, you know. So basically, all you've done is change your face paint from red to blue. You look red to black. It's like exactly the same.
Well, I got three things here. I thought, one, Sting had good hair game going, you know, and I think the other thing is, I think he looked like he was in good shape. Like, I feel like here he's in better shape than he was when he came back in 97. Like, he actually looked like he was in shape, right?
Definitely,
And then the other thing he said, what I thought was really stupid, and that made me think, he goes, Hogan has proved himself. And I thought to myself, he proved himself just like Flair did the last 15 times he turned on you, you idiot. And it's hard for me to believe that he's going for what, 9 times champion. I like, in my head, I was trying to figure out, he's Sting had actually been champion 9 times. He's 8 times and he's going for 9 times. It's crazy that he's been 9 time champion at this point.
Yeah, so, that blew my mind.
Me too. I was blown away.
Yeah, because yeah, when he did win his first title till 99, did he? So yeah, it's like, yeah, it's
9 years ago.
Year.
Yeah. Yep.
But speaking of people saying stupid things, that leads us quite nicely to our next matchup, which is the Revolution of Shane Douglas and Dean Malenko versus the First Family of Brian Knobbs and Hugh Morris. Shane Douglas, you literally had one job. One job. You know, just stay in the town and the state if you want to. And you decided to... You know, I'm going to swear it again. He decided to fuck it up. I mean, it's like, how could you get it so wrong? And I'd understand, like, if it was some sort of great promo you're saying, Logan. But, you know, it's literally, are you with the Revolution? That's pretty much all he's saying, isn't it? So he could have just cut himself off.
Yeah, I mean, Douglas should never be a face. That's just the thing that should never happen. So, I mean... Yeah, he had one job and he pretty well fucked it up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the match in a minute, but you know, Malenko could give two shits. So first off, the Revolution music is awful. Like, their music is one of the most awful theme songs I've ever heard. You know, Douglas did the terrible Triple H "Are You Ready" thing and went for the fist bump, and Dean Malenko totally ignored him, which I thought was fantastic. So it's just really trying to steal Triple H gimmick here and trying to get the crowd, and the crowd gave two shit. They don't care about these people, so nope. Just awful, awful beginning to before we even got to the match. It was already dead in the water.
It's kind of, what's it, going to the other side of the ring. They seem to do this every sort of year, WCW. They try to make, like, the First Family a thing. It's like, it's never going to happen.
They had a shot with this. Like, if they had really done it right, you know, Shane Douglas, Benoit, I mean, they had the talent to do it with.
Oh.
Yeah,
I was talking about the First Family. The Revolution.
Oh, sorry.
The Revolution definitely could have been a thing, but yeah. I mean, sorry, I should have said, maybe explain myself. Like, the First Family.
I probably tuned out. It's my fault.
The first family, they tried to do it every year, didn't they, with Ming, and try to make Ming a thing for a few months until Goldberg beat him or whatever.
Well, I know. When I think Jimmy Hart first family, I think Morris and Knobs. Those are the first.
So in what this match, in this match was a no disqualification match. So which probably should have been what the first match should have been used for. So the first sort of 5 minutes of this match, Logan, was a total free-for-all, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. And I kind of wish they had stuck with that, because, I mean, the fact that this was no DQ and no weapons or no nothing of that sort ever happens. They never really break the rules or anything like that. So this match did not use its stip very well. So and it should have been way more violent, I feel. I mean, I don't know a ton about the feud that was going into this, but, you know, if it's going to be no DQ, there's obviously some personal animosity there. So this should have been much more violent than it was.
You say there was no weapons used. Sean, did you notice that weapon that got thrown and then landed in the crowd? That was a lawsuit wait to happen.
Well, here's what I had. The no DQ stip, for the most part, for this match made no sense. But the beginning, you know, I was all like, at the beginning, I had some hope because they had the stairs. And, you know, I think it was, let me see who it was. It was Dean. I think it was Dean threw Knobs head first into the stairs, and it was like sick. And then Shane dropped the stairs on, you know, Morris's back and ankle. So it really got me going at first with the stairs. But once it got in the ring, it was pretty standard tag formula. And, you know, the guys are yelling Revolution, trying to get the crowd going. And of course, they didn't care. They didn't care. And, you know, at the end of the day, the end of this match is a crazy ass upset to me. Like, I couldn't believe the first family won. This was a mad, mad upset based on, I mean, Hugh Morris and Brian Knobs in 1999 got a win over Dean Malenko and Shane Douglas. That is amazing to me. So
that's a sentence nobody should ever speak.
Yes. Yeah. And I ended up giving the match 1.75 stars. I had high hopes at the beginning, and it just came to standard formula, and it was shit. So
I don't know if you noticed, Logan, but there was on the wide shots how many people were taking using this match to go for a piss or go get a drink. Like the amount of empty chairs that were going on, it was like, yeah, the crowd have chewed out. I'm not even going to bother with this.
They had a revolution to go take a shit to get out of the arena.
Yeah, they were going to make a revolution in the toilet.
Sean really hasn't sort of missed any detail there when he's describing the end of the match, because it was basically like just one quick clothesline that Morris did, and then he went up for the no laughing matter, hit it, and that was it. There was like no build up to that pin, was there?
No, it's crazy.
No, not really.
I did not expect that ending at all.
Jimmy takes a pretty hard bump on the Knobs at the end too, so that was a good job by Jimmy there.
So I don't know how you felt, Logan, about it. I gave this match, I went one star, so you can tell where my mood was at this point. It didn't apart from those first couple of minutes, it did not use that no DQ stip at all, did it? It went for the boring tag match formula.
Yeah, I thought the fact that they had to tag in and out was dumb too, but I figured it should just be a kind of a free for all. And I, you know, I like the beginning, like Sean said, but yeah, once they get into the ring and it just kind of becomes a tag match, nobody wants to see Brian Knobs in a fucking wrestling match. Bring out weapons, bring out garbage cans, bring out steel chairs, bring it all.
We just want to see that picture of his bunghole. That's what we want to see from Knobs. We don't want to see him wrestle.
I want to see him whack people over the head with fucking cookie sheets. That's what I want.
And again, 1.75 is probably high for me, but I really liked the beginning of this match, and I thought that was really well done. But yeah, it's not good. Not good at all.
Yeah, I'm probably with you, Ben. I'd probably go one star on this match.
And poor Dean Malenko. Like, think about the talent now we've had. We've had Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, and Dean Malenko, and this is the stuff they've been in so far. That's insane.
And speaking of guys with talent, you're doing very well with these segues tonight, boys. Just carry on with this, because you're helping me out a lot. Our next match had two guys with talent who should have been basically throwing bombs at each other, and instead we got a total shit fest. It was the World TV title match between Rick Steiner and Perry Saturn. Before the match even starts, I just want to mention the Welcome to the Jungle music, because, again, if you are regular, so you know we use that as our theme tune. So my ears pricked up instantly for that, but that music is so bad.
There's a lot of bad music on this show.
Yeah, there's no better great value in this show than that theme song. I mean, you know what, it's bad.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, that song makes the cut, but other songs get dubbed over. It's like, what is going on here? We also get mentioned in this match the fact that Buff Bagwell hasn't shown up yet for the next match, which may or may not come into play later.
He's a smart man, that Buff Bagwell.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. God forbid, I don't want to miss that Buff Bagwell match.
So I've got in my notes, and I sort of prefaced it in my intro to the match, that if both these guys were in their prime, this would be a great hard-hitting, you know, no-selling suplex kind of match. Sadly, this is not that time. It's 1999, and Rick Steiner is 5 years over the hill. Logan, it was slow. It was plodding. What did you think, buddy?
Yeah, I feel like they really... I mean, Saturn guaranteed victory for all the Revolution, and he really looked like a bitch in this match. He got his ass kicked. Rick dominates almost the whole match, and Perry gets, like, no offense. So, yeah, I mean, it was very plodding and long, and it you know... Yeah, I expected a lot more of these two guys. I made the note in this match that, like... And we talked about the crowd already, but I don't know if they just, like, really got too overexcited for the first match, but, I mean, they couldn't care less. They're so quiet. They're not doing anything. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And seeing Rick Steiner as a heel is kind of jarring as well. A lot of things on this show are jarring because it's just so much different from what I've ever seen. And Rick's kind of going for the anti-Scott Steiner because he has the little blonde in his beard like Scott Steiner has the brown in his. So he's trying to mimic his brother, but the opposite way.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was literally just thinking, I wrote a note about Rick's soul patch, but I haven't said it.
He looked like a biker gang grandfather that had just left the whorehouse with his S&M gear on.
That is a very good description.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's pretty good. I'm proud of that one.
The commentators also use this match to explain the fact that the rest were all wearing black armbands. Tony and Mike were wearing ribbons. Bobby had his shooter t-shirt on in memory of Mark Curtis, otherwise known as Brian Hildebrand, who died the week before. I remember that. I remember that when that happened. That was actually quite sad.
Yeah.
He was one of the best refs. I always remember. I can't remember if it was on the Nitro when this fan tried to get in the ring and he basically front face locked him to nearly choked him out. This poor fat guy getting overtook by basically a 100-pound wet referee.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing for me with this match. I love the Steiner brothers. They're a great tag team, and Rick Steiner, you're right. You know, this match, regardless of where Steiner is in his career at this point in time, he still had it in him to have a stiff, just like hoss, you know, fight. And Saturn was really good when he came in 97, 98. These two should have had a great match. But, you know, the sad part of it is, if this were the Steiner of 10 years ago when he was TV champion at 88 to 89 versus a Saturn that we saw in like 97, 98, this match could have been fantastic. Like, for me, I think the biggest disappointment for me in this match is this would have been one from a pay-per-view standpoint I would have looked forward to, because these were two guys I really, really enjoyed watching over the years, and it just disappointed me. It made me sad. The crowd hated it. That probably made me even more sad, and I ended up only giving it 1.5 stars, because what this should have been is, it's just sad to me. This could have been such a great match, and it just, like, it's just nobody cares at this point in this era of WCW, and it's so evident, because even your good guys that could have a good match, they're just not even trying, and it's just sad.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if we want to discuss it now or wait to the third match, but I find the booking of the whole Revolution stable very interesting in this show.
Well, they book like losers.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Shall we, I think we'll leave it till the last match that the last gentleman's in. But yeah, they're basically made to look like shit. Nope. I think it's fair to say.
I agree.
There's no worse omen than guaranteeing victory. So Perry really screwed him to begin the night.
That's it. Don't pray God and all that, you know.
And this match made me finally, you know, and I always loved Rick Steiner suplexes. This match made me not want to see another Rick Steiner suplex ever again in my life. It was sad. They were like slow motion suplexes, and it just looked so bad. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, in our last show, the Steiners were so good in that tag match. So it's really, really disheartening to see this one.
I was only 6 years earlier, by the way. 6 years ago.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, I feel like Rick's kind of checked out at this point, which is kind of sad, but I'd probably go about a star on it. It was basic and, you know, just kind of boring and plotting. So
yeah, I'm with Logan. I only went to star on this.
Man, I'm getting the high takes tonight. I don't know what I was doing when I was watching this, I guess.
You were a lot more awake than both of us were when we watched this.
Yeah, you're probably right. It was in the middle of the day, so you're probably right.
Yeah, I had to do my night before crunch, so I was
I was
on fumes at this point.
I did a day of crunch.
Wow.
But it's very interesting what you say about the Stein brothers, yeah, because that 6 year deterioration is quite alarming, actually.
They basically
kept the whole bullying attitude, but like just lost all their ability or seemingly all their ability.
Well, and just a year or two earlier, they were feuding with the Outsiders at main events, and you know, it's just sad to watch the deterioration of Rick Steiner. It's sad.
Yeah, because Big Papa Pump doesn't really become a thing till next year, and then it's far too late by then.
Yep, correct. Well, he has a pretty good run. He gets a pretty good run before the end of the company, but after that, when we see it from that point on, it's just sad. So.
Yeah, and he's great from a character perspective, but he doesn't bring a ton in the ring. But
you sure know, you're right. He doesn't.
That's another thing for another day.
Yep. I'm sure we'll have many more Scott Steiner watches in our future. So
Rumble 03 is coming our way in January.
Yes. I need to apply some Steiner math at some stage. So yeah, it's definitely going to be out then.
Yep.
So after this match, we cut to the back. So Hulk is given the chance to have a rebuttal to Sting with his good friend Mean Gene. And Hulk is in full 80s, I don't know how you phrase it, nostalgia here. Like, the interview is full of all of his old, you know, he nearly says, you know, say your prayers and take your vitamins, but he doesn't quite do it. I don't know if it's a legal thing when he's just not allowed to. Maybe it is. He also says, if he wanted to attack Sting, he'd do it to his face. He wouldn't stab him in the back. He wants Sting at his best. He doesn't know what Lex is up to. This is just a proper, like, Hulk trying to babyface stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the whole premise of this is just stupid. Like, why didn't they sell the history of Sting and Hogan here? Like, why didn't they sell that, hey, Hogan, did you forget you led the biggest faction in company history to destroy the whole entire, you know, organization? And you want to know why nobody trusts you? Like, it's just the premise of this, and Hogan not having the self-awareness to understand that nobody should trust him, it's just idiotic and stupid. It's like you forgot everything that's happened over the last 2 years. And that's what they want you to do. They just want you to get back into Hogan nostalgia and forget all about him just being the biggest dick heel of all time in this organization. It makes no sense.
Absolutely. Go on, Logan.
He swears about 500 times that he's not going to stab Sting in the back, and you know he's like, oh, I swear on my kids, I won't do it, brother. It's all Lex Luger, you know. So I mean, it's just unnecessary, and you know, like Sean said, it's just stupid.
And then we go back to the commentators and leave it to Bobby to make the best point of all, where he says quite correctly, Sting is laser focused on being the world champion, whereas Hulk is acting like a worried man. And that pretty much lends itself to Sean's point, wasn't it? You know, Sting was cool, calm, and collected, really, and Hulk was just a gibbering idiot.
Yeah, total idiot. Total idiot.
And speaking of Tootling, there we go. It's another great segue. That leads us quite nicely to our next match.
Oh, this match, I don't think any of us are going to disagree on this piece of shit coming up.
So let's start before the match with the introduction. Now, I understand the character name and I understand the gimmick, but can either of you gentlemen tell me why Berlin has to be from Berlin, Germany? Surely Berlin just being from Germany is enough. We don't need to repeat the thing twice.
Because they have to sell. Well, because they want to sell the character that he's Berlin from Berlin. it just goes hand in hand, I guess. Mm. Creative booking at its best.
Yeah, it's just a step too far, I guess.
And Logan, how long did it take you to figure out that it was Das Wunder Kid?
I knew that he switched characters at some point, so I kind of knew that this was him.
It took me literally the minute he walked out.
From a looks perspective, it probably took until he took the shades off, but I knew it was him.
Yeah, I mean, you could make him look like the Eurocool, you know, Sex Pistol biker and change his hair and give him a translator and pretend like he doesn't know English, but at the end of the day, Alex Wright looks like Alex Wright. Nothing was going to change that.
Can you imagine walking around with that haircut? That was
no, absolutely not.
Tragedy.
And of course, the commentators are playing their favorite game of, we know you know who it is, but we're not allowed to say who it is.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because the announcers at this time are also just done giving a fuck, by the way. So they're just like, this is ridiculous.
So, as I mentioned, in the previous match, they mentioned that the match should have been Berlin versus Buff Bagwell, but Bagwell hadn't turned up yet. Which, I don't know if you caught it on commentary, but Bobby Heenan was absolutely burying Bagwell quite hard during both matches. Yes. So the replacement for Buff Bagwell is Scott Criscolo's favorite wrestler, defending the good old US of A. It is your friend and mine, Mr. Hacksaw Jim Duggan. How much is he available for on Cameo, Sean?
Nothing. Listen, if you didn't book Mr. USA Hacksaw Duggan against a foreign heel, you would miss out on 20 years worth of Hacksaw Jim Duggan booking. So you got to take it where you get it.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. So my notes say that this match plays off as a basic match being called on the fly, probably because it was. It wasn't very good, was it, Logan? Really?
No, this is about as trash fire as trash fire gets. Hacksaw came out to the his little patriotic music, and it made me want to hear the Rob Houston Memorial update. I wanted to hear about Vince and the Pussy Posse, so I kind of missed that.
It would have been more entertaining for sure.
It sure would have. I also made the note that of course the crowd wakes up for fucking Duggan. I mean, they woke up just a little bit when he came out, so of course they cheer for him instead of cheering for people who actually have talent. And then the ending of the match, Duggan gets clotheslined on the outside and his head doesn't even make contact with the concrete, but somehow he gets knocked out. So, you know, dumpster fire, quarter star.
Oh man, quarter star. I went half. It's still my worst match of the night, but I went half a star for it. Berlin was meant to be a pretty big deal, wasn't he, Sean?
He was, and he, you know, the thing is, the way he was introed, going against Duggan, here's what's so funny about this match, is at one point, this match is so long, and I don't think I've seen a Duggan match this long since Mid-South. That's how long this match was. And not only that, they tried to actually wrestle. Like, at one point, Duggan tried to beat Kurt Angle. He was actually trying to mat wrestle this guy, and it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. And then the end, Berlin does the most terrible Rude Awakening. Like, his finisher is awful. It's botched. It looks terrible. And I'm with Logan on this. I'm going a quarter star. This match was hardcore suck. You look up suck in the dictionary, there should be a picture of this match in the dictionary. This is awful.
Yeah, Duggan is absolutely cooked at this point. I mean, he brings nothing at all.
And Berlin looked terrible because he couldn't do his normal Alex Wright offense. It had to be a different wrestler style than what he's used to. And it was terrible.
The win, obviously, as well, comes from a distraction by his bodyguard. Was he known as the Wall at this point, or had to give him like a funky German name? I didn't catch that in commentary.
I think he is the Wall. I think they take a while to announce it. I'm not sure because, again, like I said, I was starting to tune out of WCW on a regular basis at this point.
I don't think they ever refer to him as that. I think they just kind of keep him kind of mysterious. But on Wikipedia, it has him listed as the Wall, but I don't know if that's just kind of retroactively because they know that that's what his name is.
He's just the bodyguard.
Yeah, they're going for the German Michaels Diesel.
Yeah, because everybody wanted to see that one.
everybody wanted to see Great Value German Diesel Michaels. Yes.
So after the match, rather conveniently, Buff Bagwell shows up in Gorilla and is I don't know if he told Bagwell he drew many dimes or not, but they were having quite a heated argument, and then Bagwell comes out to the ring, tries to give Hacksaw a hug, but Jimmy Boy's not having any of it, is he?
I'm looking forward to the Duggan Bagwell match we're coming. That sets this up beautifully. Who does not want to see that 5-star classic?
I mean, you know, that's a main that is a main event anywhere in the country, isn't it?
Yep. And Hacksaw can yell "Gigolo" at him.
Gigolo.
What about that swank Tommy Hilfiger polo he had on?
Yes. That nearly took the Fashion Statement Award. Very nearly. That was a good second place.
Yeah, I was gonna say we might be talking about that one later. So I guess I could have kept that one close to the
vest. You can mention it now. You're fine. All right. So we are about halfway through this wonderful show. That's the word I'm using, Sean. Wonderful. I'm going with wonderful.
That's a word.
We will take a little break here. We have got 4 matches to come after the break, including 3 title matches and a rematch of one of the last great WCW matches. So we'll find out whether it still lives up to that level. Spoiler, it doesn't. So join us after the break for part 2 of this episode of Chicken Salad. Thank you. We'll see you back on the other side. I'm just too bad. You can buy a hair that won't grow. You can fix your nose if you say so. You can buy all the makeup the Mac can make. But if you can look inside you, find out who am I to be in the position to make me feel so. Place to Be Wrestling Network. Welcome back to episode number 4 of Wrestling Chicken Salad. My name is Ben Love. I'm here with Sean Kidd and Luke Crosland, and we are breaking down Full Brawl 1999. But while I'm here, I'd like to tell you about some of the other great things that are going on at Place to Be at the moment, including the new Place to Be Wrestling Network store, where you can buy your merchandise for all of your favorite shows, but not this one. We haven't got any merchandise yet. Hopefully we will soon. Who knows? We might be taken off the air by then, but you know, we would like to have some merchandise, please, Scott.
We keep watching these shows. We might never get one.
Yeah, this may end me. I don't know.
So for all your T-shirts, hoodies, and mug needs, go to www.tpublic.com/user/ Place to Be Wrestling Network. I can thoroughly recommend the Senior Video mug. Mr. McNamara, I'm not saying that because he's our editor, but Mr. McNamara That is a great logo, and it would sit very nicely in your mug collection. There you go. There's my little plug.
I'll back you up on that, Ben. It is one of the, I mean, listen, they're all great, but that senior video logo looks amazing. So, and you know, they all do though. I have to plug for Logan, the Impact one, the Special Relations for you, and of course mine, and the Crack and Roll one. But that one for senior video is really good.
I wasn't going to be so narcissistic to plug my own.
Well, you have to. Sometimes you have to self promote.
I need to learn this. I need to learn this ability.
That's how you meet and people like Goldilocks.
your close personal showbiz friend, Goldilocks.
Yes, yes.
I tried to get that Cody follow by pitching him the Authors of Pain gimmick for AEW, but he never responded to me.
Yeah, he's not a big responder, Logan, so don't feel bad about that one.
Yeah, it's because he's a prick. And
by the way, I like how we've hijacked the read. This might be the best read ever.
This is fine. All I was going to say about Cody is just say you really, really like the neck tattoo, because I get the feeling there's not many people who say that to him.
Well, I know our friend Tim divorced him because of that tattoo.
So. Yeah, he got let go of the stable, didn't he, because of that?
Yes.
Okay, so let's get back to it. All right, so Jenny, Tim, and Greg go big on the newest episode of Talking WCW as they discuss three matches from the WCW Career of the Giant. If you've listened to any of Miss Smith's podcasts, you can probably guess one of the matches they're talking about, but the other two may surprise you. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and Dr. G talk about the news and notes in the current NWA, and then have a conversation about Mr. Hansa Stone himself, Ronnie Garvin, in the Superstar Spotlight. In the newest episode of The Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve break down the top 25 of this year's PWI 500, followed by a payback preview and some 2003 TNA. Remember, John Moxley is the best wrestler in the world. That's what PWI tell me. Our our roving wrestling band, Jenny and the Gems, stop in Poughkeepsie for the 1993 SummerSlam Spectacular. All Lex, all the time. And a bit of a cheap plug, but the perfect companion piece to that episode would be our last episode, which was all about SummerSlam 1993. So listen to the two of them together. We also have another great feed on this particular network called the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laughing Theatre, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, there are even more pod feeds featuring some of your favourites from Place to Be Nation. The first one is Jenny Smith's The Jenny Physician. This is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, The Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, and so much more. There's also the North-South Connection, which is brought to you by JC Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, and more. The 2020 Stretch Project has kicked off. We are going to be looking to determine the greatest WCW match of all time. I don't think any match from Fall Brawl 99 will be on there. I'm just hazarding a guess. You never know. You will have till New Year's Eve to do your research, promote any matches, and build your lists. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote every day. I think we're into round three now. I want to say this. I know it's about four. It's gone down to four matches a day. I know that. So as well as that, you can make sure that you check out the placetobenation.com website each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Live Disney Action Journey. Oh, I've read that wrong. Let me get that again. Sorry about that. Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. It made no sense the second time. And if you're doing some online shopping with Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right-hand side of the place or use placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it will take you to their website and helps out PTBN with no extra cost to you. And that is the read, ladies and gentlemen. And breathe and relax. You know, I know I say this most times, but it was a good idea at the time when I said I'd do the read.
I think you had some good comedy in between that read. I think you're fine.
Yeah, I like to add my own little bit of flavor to it, as well as make some mistakes.
Also, Sean has Lenny and Kaz definitely top 25 in the GWCW.
Thank you, Logan.
See that's what happens when you say stuff like that and try to explain the whys, and that's what's gonna happen. Oh, Sean says better than Steamboat Savage. That's what's gonna happen.
So. You've got a reputation, mate. You should, you know.
Yeah, I gotta protect it, so I gotta have a shit take, you know, at least two or three times every pod. So.
Yeah. You know. Just live your gimmick.
I don't think I shy away from that.
We shall go back to Winston-Salem. Have I said that right?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm like, is that right? Yeah, that sounds right. I'm doing a Shane Douglas now. So we are going for our next match, and it is for the WCW World Tag Team Championship between the champs Barry and Kendall Windham of the West Texas Red Depths versus Harlem Heat, Steve Ray and Booker T, of course. Logan, for you, where would Harlem Heat be on the all-time WCW tag team list?
They're definitely at the top. I think they're probably my favorite tag team in WCW, honestly.
There's a shit take for you.
No, I mean, I'd probably have like the Steiners above them, but they're definitely in the top two or three, I'd say.
I'm guessing from that, Sean, that they would not be top three for you.
I have never been a Harlem Heat fan. I think they're extremely overrated, and not as a team, but I also think Booker T is very overrated as a single star as well. So I am not a Harlem Heat guy.
Interesting. What do I think? I'm kind of with you. I'd go Steiners first, but they would be sort of top three, top four.
Well, let me rephrase what I was going to say, though. Let me rephrase that. I'm sorry, guys. Stevie Ray, I think, is terrible. So when you try to do a tag team with Stevie Ray and Booker, I think Stevie Ray's bad. And when I say Booker singles run, I'm talking about Booker in the WWF, because he does have a really good run as a singles guy in WCW. So just wanted to clarify that.
I mean, obviously, Sean, in one of his other podcast ventures, is doing 80s NWA. So it depends on how you feel about combining the two together, WCW, NWA. If you're talking just WCW, I'd probably go Steiners and maybe the Hollywood Blondes. They, with Harlem Heat, they'd be my top three.
They would probably be top five WCW. You're probably
If it's NWA, obviously we've got the, you know, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll, etc., etc.
Yeah, they would make my top 20.
If you had NWA in there, they'd probably be a lot further down. I was just thinking mainly like this era and like maybe the past
I'd probably have George South and Italian Stallion ahead of them. So.
What about Tom Brandy and Johnny and Tom Zenk?
They definitely beat those two for sure.
And another important question, gentlemen, that I feel we need to settle right now: good old boys or rap is crap?
I I enjoyed Rapid Crap. I thought it was.
Was it Rap?
Yeah.
Rapid Crap is a little catchier, so I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So we're three for three on that, but I want to make sure we're all in the same place.
I think it's one of Grooney's favorites, though, so you might want to change your tune.
Well, we are on the cusp of his favorite year, guys, so
yeah,
take that
yeah,
into consideration.
Yeah.
So
we might need to get him on if we ever go to that year.
We just might.
That might officially end the pod.
Yes. So I've got a couple of notes before the match even starts. So Mike and Tony are having that same sort of Harlem Heat debate, and Bobby, and they're trying to say that, you know, obviously build Harlem Heat up and trying to say they're the best, and then Bobby goes, no, it's the Steiners. He's like, he's obviously that pissed at this point. He doesn't care like what he says. And my other note, I don't ask for much from wrestlers, but Harlem Heat, could you not have got matching tights? Steve Ray's literally just seems like he's found these from like 93, 94, and they still fit.
Yeah, that bothers the shit out of me that they don't have matching tights.
So, Sean, I actually quite like this match, and I didn't think I was going to.
I don't think
it's amazing. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, but yeah, it's I didn't hate it.
It's not. I didn't hate it either. Listen, it's not the greatest match of all time. And let's be perfectly clear. Barry Windham, who I have historically said is probably one of my top five NWA era wrestlers. He was amazing in the 80s and early 90s, even into 92, which was a really good year for him in the 93. I mean, in 99, he's definitely not where he needs to be. I mean, clearly he's a lot bigger, but he still can go. You know, he still does that amazing superplex that he does. And I think he hits some of his core Windham stuff, but he's just kind of big and bloated at this point, which is sad because if this were like 85 Windham in this match, he would have carried the match, which really is interesting to me in this match. His brother Kendall actually looks really good in this match. If it weren't for him and Booker T, this match would not be good. And, you know, I've never been a Kendall fan. I mean, even going back to the 80s where he was actually had a tag team with Dustin Rhodes, which I don't know if either one of you knew that they had a tag team called the Texas Broncos. And Kendall looked like he weighed like 50 pounds, and he always looked that way his whole career. And here he actually looks somewhat like bulky. You know, he's got the bald head, but I thought he looked really good. And this might be the actual best I've ever seen the Kendall Windham look in a match ever, which was crazy. But yeah, I didn't hate it. I thought the ending was sloppy. I gave it 2.25 stars, but we've definitely seen better tag team matches. But for this pay-per-view, I would say this next to me, this might actually for me, this I probably should have rated this one higher because it is better than the cruiserweight match, so I might have to review that. But I didn't hate this match at all. I thought it was okay, but it was because of Kendall and it was because of Booker.
What did you think of Kendall, Logan?
Yeah, I mean him and Booker definitely brought it in this match. I think if like Sean said, if not for them, this match could have been real bad. Yeah, Barry's just kind of out of shape and he's not. I don't think he's mentally all there at this point, just motivation wise. So, and Stevie's always been not the best. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, like y'all said, it's not the worst match, but, Kendall and Booker, definitely bring their part of it. There's a point, and this is kind of my gimmick, harping on the refs, but there's a point when Hennig just punches Booker right in the face and the ref is looking directly at him and they have no consequences. So
I had that note, Logan. You've trained me well on the whole ref shit from the Impact Pod, so you're starting to give me that eye for the ref stuff, and that's because of you.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know that ever bothered me before, but now that I'm like really like introspectively looking at this stuff, it really stands out to me for some reason.
I probably wouldn't have noticed it either if I hadn't noticed how much we're looking at it in Impact. That's what caught my eye here. It's like I had that ref note in my notes too, so that's funny.
I think we've all got the same note because I've got my exact note is Steve, obviously Booker's playing face of peril. Stevie comes in anyway as the ref says fuck it.
Yep. And I had breaks down at the end, but clearly Kurt and Barry beating up on Booker in front of the ref. That's what I had. So yeah, I think we're all on the same page.
the other note I had, and I don't know if you two will agree with me, you know that phrase Tag Wrestling 101. You always hear it on yes. some of these older yes. shows, right? And they're usually referring to a great match, aren't they? when you say that. Tag Wrestling 101.
Yes.
For me, that's like an introduction. I'm right in thinking in American culture, 101 is an introduction, isn't it, into something?
Yeah, it's this like the match, beginning of you learning about it.
Yes. This match is as basic and vanilla a tag match as you can get. It's got every sort of spot you get in a tag match, and the work is at half speed. So for me, this match is almost Tag Wrestling 101 in that aspect.
Yep.
You know, and on this show, basic ain't a bad thing. I went 2 stars, so I'm quite comfortable with that.
Yep, and I went 2.25, so.
Yeah, I'd probably go around 2 as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was basic, but basic ain't a bad thing.
Yeah, and Booker T's missile dropkick is always one of my favorites, so.
That was a great finish at the end. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, his is probably second to Jericho's in my mind. Missile dropkick wise.
I like Booker it.
Booker has one good move, so we'll give him that.
and the spinneroonie.
Yeah, that's not a move. That's a gimmick.
Okay, so speaking of gimmicks, you're leading me in so well, Sean, tonight.
I'm trying my best.
Because our next match features a really underrated gimmick, which is, of course, Sid Vicious being the Millennium Man with his fake streak going.
I agree with you 100%. I love this gimmick.
I love this gimmick, too. Again, I'm going to ask another general question. I'm right in saying that Sid is everybody's favorite bad wrestler. I think that's universal, isn't it?
I would agree with you. He's one of my all-time favorite bad wrestlers.
Yeah, I love me some Sid for sure. Yeah.
And you know what? He could suck so bad, and I wouldn't care because I just love Sid. So
exactly. I honestly don't think I've ever met a wrestling fan who's like, no, I don't like Sid.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing with Sid. Sid is what he is. You know, he's not really into the wrestling. He's just there to collect a paycheck. His promos are bad. You know they're going to be bad, so you love it. And you know he'd rather be playing softball. So if you accept Sid for what he is and embrace that, he's probably going to be everybody's favorite wrestler because he lives what he is and he doesn't shy away from it. So that's how I see Sid.
Does he cut promos on the softball field like he does?
I really wish he would.
Does he say, I am the master and the ruler of the diamond?
I'm as bad as you think I am.
Yeah. I'm not half the man that you are.
Yeah, I'm not half the man that you are. I'd love that on softball. That'd be the best softball game of all time.
I want to point out a couple of things in the pre-match promo before we get into the actual match. Benoit says something about Sid being the biggest man he's ever faced. And I kind of feel like he probably faced the Giant at some point, so that's bullshit. And then he says...
He did in 96 at Bash at the Beach.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought. He was like he the Giant at some point.
In a tag team match. He sure did.
I gotcha. And then he also says Sid's going to have to kill him to take the U.S. title. And I said we might all be better off if he had actually done that. So that's all I have on the pre-match promo.
Good old Benoit.
Sorry. No, I apologize for that one. I don't want to witness murder. It's that's a total retroactive.
Just to let everybody know, I presume you two are all in the similar boat to me. We'll be fine talking about Benoit matches. We're not going to be like, you know, glossing over them or anything like that. We're not going full WWE on people here.
He did what he did, so
you don't have to like the person, but you can respect his reputability, and you can talk about his matches. I think.
I don't want to make too much light. I'm not making any light of what happened at the end, but he didn't age, did he? He looked exactly the same in '99 as he did in 2006, 2007.
He was a little more veiny.
but the face is exactly.
Yeah, he's still got the same kind of dodo face when he looks at it. Yeah, yeah.
So the match itself, um, I I enjoyed it. It played off the whole sort of technical wrestler versus power wrestler aspect quite well, I thought. I don't know how you felt about it.
Logan, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Sean.
I like that Benoit, for me, the start is just really cool when Benoit stares down Sid. He's not scared of him. He just stares him down. And, you know, it's interesting because Sid just monsters over Benoit, and Benoit just looks at him like he doesn't care. I like that, you know, he throws Benoit across the ring. You know, I like that Benoit struggles against the power, but finally goes after the leg, which makes sense. But here's the bad part. And Sid no sells nothing. So even though that Benoit goes after the leg, Sid does not sell it. you know, so I thought that was funny. But at the end of the day, you know what you're going to get with Sid. There was another spot where, you know, Sid had to extend his arms out, obviously, for Benoit when he was trying to go on a cross pin. But then he drops them, which I thought was pretty funny. It was a big botch. But anyway, the one thing that did surprise me that Sid knew a wrestling move. He actually did a Cobra Clutch, and he did it into a slam, which I thought was pretty good. So at the end of the day, the match was okay. You know, it could have been a lot better. Like, with these two, Benoit could have a much better match with Sid. And I did go 2.25 stars, but I thought the powerbomb, Sid powerbombs always look good. Sometimes they look even better when they're botched. As long as they don't hurt somebody, but the match was okay. It could have been better, but there was some good stuff. There was some bad stuff. I went 2.25.
Logan, how did you feel about it?
I got you. I did 2 stars. I thought there was a lot of stalling at the beginning of the match, so that kind of took me out of it at the beginning. But I think once they got in the ring and really started actually wrestling each other, I love the leg work that Benoit was doing. I also liked when he used the steps to kind of crush Sid's leg in between the ring and the steps. Sid's selling of said leg work didn't really inspire much, but it was a solid match. I think definitely with these two guys, I think it could have been a little bit better, but you know, it wasn't all that bad or anything. But at one point, Sid's in the crossface and he clearly taps immediately. But you know, logic just goes straight out the window in these situations. And Benoit missing the headbutt always makes me cringe now. But
yeah,
I went 2 stars.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I've also mentioned about the whole tapping out thing over on the bad refereeing tip, and as well, like you say, the whole thing with Benoit missing the headbutt and then the vicious powerbomb bump as well. It was obviously, now you look at it, it's just not nice at all.
Yeah, it's always brutal knowing how much damage he was doing to his brain throughout all that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, that's brought a bit of a downer on things.
Sorry.
Let's try. It's all right. We can do this. We're amongst friends. Okay, so we'll go to our next match, having discussed that, which is Diamond Dallas Page versus the man Bill Goldberg. This is a rematch from 11 months previously. Apart from the Brock match at WrestleMania, would you say the first CDP Goldberg match was his best?
It was definitely a hidden gem surprise. I don't think anybody expected that Halloween Havoc match to be as great as it was. So, yeah, I would say it's probably one of Goldberg's better matches. Absolutely.
What do you reckon, Logan?
It's definitely up there. I think it's probably either his best or, you know, it's definitely
top
up there.
2 or 3, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I've also got my notes, and I'm glad I get a chance to talk about it now. The awful network dubbing of DDP's music. You know, smells like Self High Five is genuinely like one of the probably top 3 WCW theme tunes. And like, you know, what have we got in its place? Just some awful, awful generic rubbish.
It's bow now 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 now.
Those copyright laws are a killer.
I mean, they could have gone the Jericho route and put it's me, it's DDP in, and we I would have accepted that.
Yeah, that would have been okay.
I was going to say, I do love DDP's actual theme, but I don't hate the dub, actually.
I'm on my own, then. So, before the match starts, we get the Goldberg chants. Sean, what do you reckon? Piped in this time or actual crowd?
They might be piped in. I mean, at this point, I don't know. They might be piped in. The crowd's been dead all night, so it's probably hard to tell, but I would say it's piped in. You know, the other thing I love about, you know, Goldberg, has anyone ever thought about Doug Dillinger, like, looking at him as a security head was funny? Like, I mean, literally, like, I see him popping out of his recliner after drinking beer four times a week and getting up and getting on a plane and going to work, flying home, getting back in his recliner and drinking beer. He has to be the worst looking head of security I've seen. It's, I just don't get that. And he's been there for, like, ever. So, one hell of a head of security in Doug Dillinger.
Yeah, he's definitely dad's best friend that drinks too much.
Yeah, or that great uncle, or yeah, he's that relative that just drinks a lot of beer.
Him and Arn are around that table all afternoon. It's like, oh, we gotta go to work now.
Well, I guess in reality, that's my future, so maybe that's why I like Doug Dillinger.
I also like how, like, WCW, they went from the security wearing all suits, and then they went proper casual, just
the yellow, absolutely.
You know, let's make him blend in with the crowd. We want be one. No. So I don't like talking usually about play-by-play, but I did like at the beginning of this match the whole bit where the ref's checking Page out, and he finds. What did he find? I wrote to him notes. He found a chain, and then the roll of quarters dropped out of his hand, Logan.
Yeah, I like the whole the roll of quarters fall out of his hands, and they kept calling it half dollars. Like, what? You know, they're quarters. Like, nobody carries around fucking half dollars.
Well, sure.
But yeah, I like that little bit at the beginning.
Do you carry around half quarters, Sean, or half dollars?
No, I don't.
Oh.
I couldn't tell you the last time I saw a half dollar, honestly.
Well, I've never seen one, but I've got a reason never to see one.
I know I have some, but I think they're like in one of those like little coin jugs that you throw all your extra coins in. So it's probably I have some somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I have some in like a little sack somewhere. Just could say I have one, you know.
Okay, so this is another in a long line tonight of very basic matches. Sean Page was trying to channel like his 1991 heel in this, but it didn't quite work.
In this match, no. Like the triad that he had formed with Canyon and Bam Bam had really good potential. They had a really good potential as the that triad group, but. Here's the thing with this match, and I'm going to be short and sweet with this match. This match can fuck off. what they gave us here, like what we saw at 98, what these two could put together, and I guess the only dynamic difference is now is that DDP is now a heel. Back then he was a face. But this match was a tragedy. The outside interference, the ref-ness was another one where the ref just, you know, clearly sees everything but doesn't do anything about it. And I hate this match because I hate it because of what I know it could have been. This match for me got a quarter star and it can fuck off. And that's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
Holy shit.
I wow. Logan.
Oh, wait a minute. Did I say a quarter? Wait, did I say a quarter?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Three quarters. Not a quarter, three quarters. Sorry about that. I had a stroke out moment in my little rant there. I apologize. Three quarter stars.
Logan, are you going to go that low or are you going to add a bit?
Oh, he's going to give it like 2.5.
Nah, I'll add a bit. Nah, I probably have it about 1.5. Yeah, this is definitely far off from their outing at Halloween Havoc. But, you know, it was just basic like most of the other matches. You know, DDP got a little bit more offense than I would like to see in a Goldberg match. I feel like Goldberg just come out there and kick some ass. And, you know, he could take a few shots here and there. But DDP really kind of controlled a lot of this match. And I think Canyon kind of almost saved Goldberg's life because he smashes him with the party tray or whatever that was supposed to be that he smashed him with. And a piece like falls on the mat and he grabs it right before Goldberg yes. falls on it. So,
yes.
And Goldberg got cut hard way on his head from it looked like one of those dishes that you would put like the punch bowl on top of.
When,
so
is, when does Goldberg not get cut hard way? Like, the guy bleeds constantly. And, you know, it's just crazy. This match is just so ridiculous. And you're right. You know, Canyon probably saved his life. And it's just, God, this match is, it's just like all these matches for me are so frustrating because the talent involved in these matches, these could have been really good three-star matches. And they just chose not to do it. And that's what's so frustrating. And this one out of all of them probably frustrates me the most.
Half-assing.
Yes.
Yeah, it could definitely have been better, but I always love seeing the spear and jackhammer combo from Goldberg, so that'll bump it up a little bit always.
Me and Logan are pretty much in sync because I also went 1.5, and yeah, for the same reasons, actually. I am a bit of a Goldberg mark, and I will quite happily admit it.
I'll make one note before the match that Goldberg overstepped his fireworks, so he had to kind of back up when he was walking out.
Well, and I'll add one last thing. Here's the thing we all love about Goldberg. Goldberg, we like when he comes out, he just beats the crap out of people. DDP got so much offense in this, and Goldberg is not a defensive wrestler, so when he has to be on a defense for a long period of time, we already know the match is going to suck.
Yeah,
And that's what happened here.
With the one exception, the best Goldberg matches are 5 minutes and under, aren't they?
Well, their match at Halloween Havoc wasn't even 5 minutes, but they still put together a good match because it was face versus Goldberg having to sell, you know, face and peril the whole time, which he seemed like he had to do here, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, heel DDP at this point in his career is just weird because he's been a face for so long at this point.
Yeah, because 99, he was all over the place, wasn't he? He was like world champ, and then, you know, a month later, he was in a tag team, and then he'd gone back up to US title level, and then here, he's sort of being elevated up to Goldberg's level again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Weird stuff, 99.
it don't get any more sane in our main event. Which is for the world title. It is between Sting and Hulk Hogan. Before the match, we get a Michael Buffer special intro. Do any of you, I should have done my research on this. Do any of you know how much Buffer got paid for these?
Oh, a lot.
A lot of money. I want to say it's upwards of $100,000 a shot.
I want to hope that he gets paid per word, because that would be the only explanation as to why these intros are so long.
I'm going to do some research while y'all talk.
Go on. Good lad, Luke. But to be fair, the crowd...
Hey, guys, it was $25,000 a pop.
Wow. And he was doing every pay-per-view until...
So he had 64 appearances, so that would have totaled $1.6 million for him on WCW alone.
Jesus. Yeah, my first note on this match was I don't know how bad their money trouble was at this point. The fact that they're still paying his ass to come in here is ridiculous.
$25,000. That's insane.
What could you do with that money? Employ some better referees.
Maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I need to start being a wrestling referee.
Oh, you'd be tremendous, Logan. You'd be absolutely brilliant.
I'm short and pudgy, so I kind of fit the mold.
So, obviously, for those who haven't watched this period of WCW, it is kind of insane as well to see Hulk not only back in red and yellow, but pretending like the previous 3 years haven't happened. He's just settled straight back into that babyface role.
Yeah, you know, the note I meant was, remember when in 96 this Hogan was stale, in 99 he still is. Because, you know, he switched back, and you know what? The reality is, in 2.5 years later, he does it much, much better in a bigger scale. Yeah. But this is so random and so out of nowhere, and it's just awful.
My note is Hulk in full red and yellow mode, but come 2002 in WCW, this is what the people want.
Yes.
But here in WCW, I mean, we got to hear American Made again. That's yeah. the only good thing. Speaking of theme music.
Yeah, that was awesome. Buffer called Hogan the King of Hulkamania, too, so I thought that was funny. And they mentioned something about Hogan being on the cover of WCW Magazine. Did either of y'all ever get WCW Magazine?
God, I didn't even know that was still around in 99. That's crazy.
Yep.
I got the old WCW comic back in the day.
So did I. Yeah. I collected that comic. And the problem with that comic, which is funny, is they could never keep a storyline because people kept leaving.
Where's Ron Simmons gone?
Yeah, it was hard because the book had to be written like months in advance. So that's a whole other show and a whole other topic, though.
So, Logan, you know, you just said like Hulk Hogan's the king of Hulkamania. Does that make Brutus Beefcake the clown jester or...
That's probably about right.
Or is he like the Prince Regal, you know?
No, he's definitely the court jester for sure.
Okay, so we haven't even started the match yet, but before the match gets underway, Bret the Hitman Hart comes out. He is challenging the winner of the match. I'm not sure how many appearances he made. Obviously, this is him stepping back into the ring after Owen's death. This might be actually maybe like, I don't know if he's only been back a week or two at this point.
Well, we know he's back in December and how that goes. Yes. So, yeah.
He was in one of the pre-match packages talking to Hogan in the back. So he had been back for a couple of weeks, I think, at least.
Because the Benoit match doesn't happen until the end of September. I know that.
Yeah, it's coming up.
So.
And then he's also in the tournament in November. So,
oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, the 32-man tournament. Oh, that's great stuff.
Yeah, that might have a future appearance here at some point, too. So.
we could just do an episode, a special, like, 99 WCW year in review episode.
that would take a whole year if we did.
So I don't know how you all felt, but it felt in the worst way like we were going back to the 80s with this match. Like the whole like stalling and, you know, rest holds and the light, as I defined it as the light brawling on the outside. I felt like we were back in 1986, Logan. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I don't know what they could have done differently, but this match was so boring and it was just so plotting and it was, I mean, that style worked in a different time, but this wasn't the venue, this wasn't the time period. That this could have possibly worked back then, but it did not work tonight.
Absolutely. Sean, sorry we cut you off, mate. What were you going to say?
No, you're fine. I was going to say, I didn't hate the beginning of this match, actually. I thought, you know, you do the tip, if you're into the Hogan nostalgia, they do the test of strengths. They do Hogan get a roll up in a schoolboy. They go back and forth. There's arm locks, there's hammer locks. Hogan does a drop toe hold. I mean, he's actually wrestling, which you haven't seen Hogan do like a wrestling match in forever. So I thought Hogan looked really good. I thought there was a nice back and forth there for a little while. So, and then they did back and forth clotheslines and suplexes. And you know what? I just didn't hate the beginning of it, to be honest with you. I thought it was pretty good to start. And then we could talk about the rest of the match after that.
Well, it just seemed like, I don't know if they were running short on time, but it was like the match had the beginning, the match had the end, but there was no middle. It just seemed like it went straight to like the Scorpion death, the Scorpion splash in the corner, and then to all the interference was going on.
Yeah, I mean, did the Triad and these two guys have a feud going in? I felt like that was really random. But I like I said, I'm not real familiar with this time period.
I don't remember the Triad having a thing with Hogan. Sean, that doesn't ring a bell with me. I thought that was pretty random as well.
Well, I think the whole ending was random. You know, how many people come out for the end of this match, right? So DDP's out. Then you get sit out, and, you know, it's just, anyway, that's a whole other story. But the match itself, you know, like I said, the beginning of it wasn't too bad. Then it gets into all the hokey run-ins and gets slow, and then the ending comes out of nowhere, which, you know, I'm going to spoil it now, everybody. You know, Sting turns heel, and we've all been swerved. We've all been swerved, God damn it. Vince Russo's not even here, and we already got the big swerve going on, bro. But nobody wanted to – I mean, no one wanted to see Sting as a heel, and it's just such a flip-flop now. Hogan's the face, Sting's the heel. And this is – and again, another ref trope. The ref gets nailed, and here we are, and Sting wins. And I actually gave this 1.25 stars. I thought it started out promising. Then it got slow. Then it had the parade of main eventers come out, and it became ref bullshit, an unnecessary turn. And what I also thought it did is exposed a very big main event pool that are really past their best days. So if you really think about it, their first title runs as world champions. Hogan was 84. Sting was 90. Bret Hart was 92. Sid's first world title was in 96. And even though he's been around since the 80s, Luger's first one was 91. And then you had DDP. He's been around since the 80s, too, and his first world title was in 99. You know what's interesting to me? There's zero new stars in this, and Goldberg is nowhere near any of this, which is stupid because he's their biggest star, and he's not even a heel. So this is why WCW went to shit. This match right here, if you want to watch a match and say why WCW turned to shit, watch this match.
yeah, I was saying, go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
Yeah, go on, you go first, like, go your first.
I was about to say, Sting turns heel, quote unquote, and he gets the biggest pop of the night. I mean, the crowd goes wild for him winning, so I mean, I really don't think it worked.
No, this is just bad. Just bad.
I always remember a quote, and I think it's from the Death of WCW DVD, and they were on about the fact that WCW were nicking all of these headline stars, you know, the Hogans, the Savages, etc. And Jim Ross, who said it, he said, yeah, but these guys get older and older every day. We've got the new up-and-coming stars. You know, these guys are getting older and older and more washed up. Our guys have got, you know, 5-10 years in the tank, whereas, you know, the WCW lot, you'll be lucky if they get 2.
And that's why I just brought it up, is because if you look at all those people that ran out for that main event, think about how long they've all been around. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wait a minute, guys. Just wait a second. I'm getting something in my headset. What's that? Sean Logan, you're not going to believe this. I'm heading over to Joe Fowler in the Lex Express. Joe, what? Can you hear me?
Hey there, Ben. I'm Joe Fowler, and I'm here on the Lex Express with driver Hank Carter. And I got to ask you, Hank, what do you think of Lex's dastardly acts?
Well, I'm going to be real honest with you, Joe. I'm pretty goddamn upset. I've been driving this asshole around for 6 years now. How could he do that to the children? Now their diseases just might kill them. I mean, they might just lose their will to live. I mean, Lex was all that they were hanging on to. Well, Hank, I sure hate to hear that. Back to you, wait, Vincent, well, that's my fucking gimmick. How could you take that away from me? Well, I guess I'll go back to Tony, whoever the fuck that is.
God, I'm not Tony, but thank you, Joe.
I'll go back to Tony at ringside, whoever the fuck that is.
Okay.
He's not at ringside yet. He's up the top.
I am very, very happy to have Joe Fowler back along with the Lex Express bus driver 6 years after.
Well, you know, he got over that much in the last episode. We needed to bring him back.
Joe Fowler and the bus driver can come back anytime they want. They are more than welcome.
Damn right they can.
Yes. And we appreciate them stopping by.
But yeah, the poor children. He's so right.
Well, I said on that podcast, Lex Luger gives no shit about children, and I think tonight we just saw that as he broke all the hearts. So
as Tony put it, we trusted the wrong man all along.
Yep.
It's a Pavlovian play on a major scale. That damn Sting and Luger.
Damn that.
That piece of shit, Lex Luger. I ain't driving around no more.
let Sting go find a bus driver.
Oh, the Scorpion Express?
Yes.
they'll be doing a WCW Monster Truck thing in a few years. Right, so that wraps up the show, but it doesn't wrap up our show because we've got some awards to give out. I know you're all very excited about that. We begin our awards with Sean. What was your match of the night?
Well, I know earlier I said the Cruiser, but I really had to evaluate it, and I really did like the tag team match. So my match of the night, I'm going to switch it to the World Tag Title match.
Okay. Logan?
I went with the opener.
I went with the opener as well. It was my highest grade of the night. At a massive... So, Logan, what was your worst match of the night?
Without a doubt, Hacksaw and Berlin.
Sean?
Absolutely ditto.
Now, I gave my worst score to Hacksaw and Berlin, but on a show where we are trying to find chicken salad or chicken shit, my worst match of the night is the match that I felt had the most potential but under-delivered massively, which was Rick Steiner and Perry Saturn. That should have been, like, you know, a hardcore suplex fest. And what did we get? Just slow, plodding nonsense. Hacksaw's never going to give you anything, really. But those two were capable of so much more, and they just didn't bother. So that's why I went for that. What was your most surprising match of the night, Sean?
Most surprising match for me was probably the tag title match, because for me, I didn't expect Kendall Windham to shine the way he did. And he really helped carry that match with Booker, and I was pleasantly surprised by Kendall Windham. So I'm going to give it to that match.
Logan?
And I'll use your logic on the worst match there, Ben. I'm going to go with the main event, but just because of how boring it was, I think it was surprising in a bad way.
Yeah, I like that logic. I also went with the tag title match because it pleasantly surprised me. And thus, and I'll kick this one off, my MVP on the similar theme to the tag title, I picked Booker T because... Him, like we've all said, him and Kendall basically carried that match. How about you, Logan?
I say, despite my hate of the Cruiser match, I gave it to Kaz Hayashi just because I really think he busted his ass in that match, and it was the only reason it was even any semblance of, like, okay. So I gave it to Kaz.
Sean?
It's a tough call for me because, Kendall was so much better in that tag match than he deserved, but I think I have to go with Logan on Kaz because carrying Lane to a decent match, even though we all shit on it, Kaz did everything in his power to make that match good. So I'm going with Kaz too.
Fair enough. And our final award of the evening is our Fashion Statement Award. It's the 90s Fashion Statement Award. Once we get out to the 90s, I'm sure we'll just change the name. Sean, what did you go for?
Nothing for me beats grandfather Rick Steiner coming out of the whorehouse in his S&M biker Steiner gear and that collar around his neck. That's my very descriptive fashion statement of the night.
There's an image for you all. If you get nothing else from this podcast.
He's like the old man in Dodgeball when they switch the outfit.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going for, Logan?
Well, I originally wrote down Mysterio stealing Kidman's outfit, but I think I'm going to go with Buff Bagwell. He had the backwards beret hat on and the Tommy Hilfiger polo, so I'll give it to Buff on that one.
I went nice, and I went sentimental. Mine's going to Bobby for the shooter T-shirt. I thought it was a lovely touch.
Yeah, good tribute for sure.
Yeah. yeah, better than the black, you know, well, obviously the black armbands were lovely as well, but, you know, it was a nicer thing than that. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the shooter t-shirt, definitely, for me. Okay, so that wraps up this show. Our next show is going to be in October. It's my pick this time. So being in October and being, as we're on this WCW high at the moment, high again in quotes.
Oh, you're going to torture us some more.
I am afraid so. So it boiled down to two. The logical person would pick the follow-up to this show to carry on. How you've known me for a while, gentlemen. Am I ever logical? No. So.
No, there's no logic in this show.
We are going to be watching a Halloween Havoc. I think that's no secret. However, the year is going to be 1998.
Oh, you give me Goldberg DDP twice in a row.
Yeah, but this is a good one.
Yeah, but let's not talk about the other match on that show that's not a good one, or the many of them.
this is why I've picked it, because I'm thinking there's a little bit of something for everybody on this show. So I don't think it's actively bad per se, but does it have the worst match of all time on it? Probably yes.
One of the best hidden gem matches and one of the worst.
That's what I'm thinking. There's this whole problem that WCW have, which they have quite often, where they have a lot of meaningless, you know, matches in the undercard. So I think on this show you've got like Meng versus Wrath for no reason and Finlay versus Alex Wright for no reason. So it's a whole load of combinations, and obviously this is the show that's very famously goes off the air before it should, which is one of the death nails to WCW. So it's quite an important show from that point of view.
I bet you Finlay versus Alex Wright's much better than what we got from Berlin tonight.
I'm absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah. Hey, we didn't decide, is this show chicken salad or chicken shit? We gotta wrap that up.
Oh no, yes, that's the most important question. It's gotta be chicken shit.
Logan, what do you think?
Yeah, just on the surface, it's chicken shit for sure. I don't really even know how I would rebook it, because I think it's just that it's just a bad time for the company, and I think it's just, you know, they had the wrong pieces in the wrong place, and I just don't even know if there's a way to fix it.
You know what? I'll agree with you guys. It is chicken shit. The way I would fix it, I don't think you really need to change anything in your matches. What you have to change, because you have some pretty – we even said it all night. There's matches on here that should have been great and weren't. Like DDP Goldberg could have been great. Hogan Sting could have been good. Steiner Benoit could have been good. We already said the tag match was good. They could have kept the same card and they would have had better matches, but everybody phoned it in tonight. That's my take. And I guess the other thing I would ask is, we had this debate in our little chat together. Do we think this pay-per-view is a worse watch than King of Ring 95? Because that for me is the one I got to figure out.
Yeah, I'd rather watch King of the Ring 95, sadly.
Yeah, I think King of the Ring has a camp entertainment value that this doesn't.
Yeah, I think I agree. So I think when we walked out of King of Ring 95, we said we wouldn't see a worse show. So I think all three of us agree this show actually beats King of the Ring 95 and takes the title of chicken shit so far.
All I was gonna say is, King of the Ring is at least like a bright, colorful show. This show, apart from the red and yellow, has hardly any color in it. Yeah. It's just boring, plodding match after boring, plodding match. You know, there's no duds, but everything is in that 1 to 2.5 range. So, yeah, it's competent wrestling, but it's nothing you want to go out your way and see ever again.
And it looks really low rent, the stage and the, like, starlight thing, or like the starlight apron that's hanging behind it. It just looks real cheap. But yeah, if I never watched this show again, I'd be satisfied, I think.
So we have a new chicken salad champion.
we will at some stage publish the league table, but yes, I'm quite happy putting this show table.
Yeah, it's definitely at the bottom.
I think it's going to take something like TNA Victory Road 2011 to beat it.
Yeah, I don't really know what the rest of that show looks like, but the main event's, you know, obviously very famous for how badly it turns out. But yeah, it's going to take something real boring and real actively bad to beat this one.
if you ever get the chance, guys, just give it a pass. I think we've done the hard work for you.
I mean, well, of course, watch it along with this show, but like, if you never watch it again after that, you're good.
Yeah. Give it the once over, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap things up. Logan, have you got anything you would like to plug while you're here?
Sure. The newest episode of Highway to the Impact Zone came out yesterday. We discussed the 6th episode of Impact as well as the 103rd weekly pay-per-view. It was actually the first set of shows that were somewhat decent together. So, I mean, I think this is the first like really good week that we've had. So hopefully we're starting to get on a little bit of an uptick, and I'm really looking forward to our next one. But both of you guys were on that episode with me, so it's always a good time, and everybody should go listen to it for sure.
It was a good time, and yeah, like you say, it was actually nice to have two decent episodes back to back.
It was a godsend. That episode, that last episode, is a lot of fun. It's a fun watch, a fun show. So,
okay, what have you got going on, Mr. Kid?
So by the time you hear this, we should have the next NWA Crock and Roll episode debuting on Wednesday. So me, Colm, and Dr. G, we look at June of 85 Crockett, and we'll have a guest that's never been on a pod before whatsoever. So one of my friends from my past, so who doesn't know Crockett. So that should be a lot of fun, hopefully educating him on it. So that's always a fun listen. And I also have an episode of Blockbuster coming up where I'll be looking at the original Batmans. The Schumacher and the Tim Burton ones, and then we're actually going to be looking at the original Batman 66 movie too, that camp classic. So
awesome.
Yeah, and then the last thing I want to promote is over on the North South feed, we have a new pod there, comics feed, called Shrink Wrap with Jenny and Tim that I do, that we take a look at a story arc of a character and look at it from an in-universe mental evaluation standpoint. It's different. Almost somewhat artsy, but there's some really snarky comedy in there where it's kind of hidden, but it's also fun. So it's definitely experimental, but it's a lot of fun to do. So if you're into comics and you want a different take on it, definitely go get a listen. So those are the things I got going on.
Excellent. The Shrink Wrapped, I can thoroughly recommend that as well. That was excellent. I thought, well done to all three of you.
Thank you.
For me, it's a relatively quiet couple of weeks for me. We had a very special edition of Special Relations. We were joined by the boss, the podfather himself, Scott Criscolo. It's a 3.5-hour epic, so don't try and listen to it all in one go, but it's a fantastic listen. We talk about Summer Slams, we talk about British music, Scott's Happy Place as well. All the usual features are there. You can reach me personally on Twitter at BenL1981. I want some of those Sean Kidd follows as well.
Yeah,
we're looking at you, Gold.
I don't think we'll get quite as famous as Sean does, but, you know, we'll get there.
I love that this is a running gimmick, by the way, because it's so asinine. But we'll stick with it. It's great.
You're good, close personal friend.
Yeah, personal friend Goldilocks.
And I know I plug it a lot on pods that I'm on, but Miranda is finally in Europe, so Telly and T is going to be happening. I can't remember if I know I've told Sean, we are going to be breaking down 24. That is going to be our first TV show. So,
I've been waiting for that pod for 6 months. So
I know, but thanks to COVID, it took her rather a long time to get here. But yeah, she's over here now, so Hopefully the pilot episode we recorded will be out soonish in the next couple of weeks, and then we're aiming for the start of October for the first proper episode. So fingers crossed we'll be there. So thank you very much, Logan. Thank you very much, Sean, for joining me on episode 4 of Wrestling Chicken Salad. I'd like to say episode 5 will be Halloween Havoc 1998. And just remember, guys, in a world where you could be anything that you want to be kind. Thank you so much for listening. My name's been Ben Locke. Over and out.